Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Madness, and I welcome you to episode 91 of The Prerogative. On this episode, this is the big one where there's going to be some ranting, there's going to be some raving. I'm going to try to behave myself. But on this episode, we review the now most grossing animated movie of all time, and you don't know how much that hurts me, Frozen. Which, if you guys know my views, as I've been saying them since November, kind of have a different opinion than everybody else. But that being said, I want somebody to somewhat balance me out, to keep me in line, and who better than the legend himself, Chris Stanton from Shaft Plus.
I cannot believe you're up to 91 already.
Hey, I am a workhorse.
That I don't know whether to be impressed or disgusted.
Well, are you impressed by my, you know, fortitude, or just disgusted at, you know, all the ways you guys have tried to, you know, stop me and failed?
Probably that one.
I mean, you've had Lucid throw me in the back of a truck, you know, Gene hit me in the back of the head with a shovel, you put concrete ganaches on me and tried to drown me in the bottom of the lake. None of it worked.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, you gotta admit, 91 is a pretty impressive number. I'm on the road to 100.
Yeah, we'd be right at, I think, like, we just released episode 11, so we'd be at 161 if we were continuing to go on the numbering format.
Hey, that's
and
how I put it.
So, you know.
It's 161 to me.
Yeah, it's, we still are getting used to the new format, and we need to reel ourselves in again, because they're getting long again, and the whole reason of doing the Switch was to have shorter shows and be released at more frequency, but that's not going to happen until near the end of this month, because Gene's still in school, so...
Well, we're all in school at this point.
I'm not.
Well, that's right, you're not.
Finally
me
done.
Me and Gene are. And I just started.
Yeah.
And yet I'm still somehow in the past couple weeks released 6 or 7 different podcasts.
Yeah, but you also don't really have a full-time job that requires 40 hours out of you.
Well, that's because I can't do 40 hours any week anymore.
But, you know, that's the thing. Gene's doing 40 hours and school and the podcast, so...
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely understand. By the way, Anime Boston episode, just a wonderful episode. Makes me wish I was at Anime Boston this year.
Yeah, we were very happy that it went as well as it did. Just compared to last year. And I think last year everyone was just not really feeling it because of everything that happened the month prior.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people aren't to blame. Other people could have had better attitudes overall. And, you know, that's all I'll say about that.
Yes, there's two very long episodes, if you want to really get into that, that you can find on www.chefplus.com.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's great to talk about anime, and we love talking about anime, but we're here to talk about Frozen, and I don't know, have you heard my opinion from the Charlie Brown episode that I did way back in November?
No, I didn't.
I ripped it a new one. Frozen has been a very tough movie for me to because part of it is I do feel there are things wrong that with the actual movie itself that no one will talk about, but a lot of it is also the politics surrounding it, which we will get into, that it's just, I'm just tired of this. Every time I say, well, I don't like Frozen as much, immediately somebody says, oh, you just don't like that, you know, the princess didn't need to be saved. That's the immediate thing they go to, and it's like, no.
That's the part I liked.
My point is, everybody, oh, you have a problem with that? No, I don't have a problem with that. That part's fine. It's everything else surrounding it that seems to be ignored because apparently a princess didn't need to be saved. So we can just forget everything else that was not up to Disney standards with this movie.
Yeah.
You know, like the music. Which, by the way, that's what really set me off, was reading these reviews, and these reviewers saying, oh, it's the return of the music like Howard Ashman used to do. No, it's not.
Well, I mean, I will give the music the whole thing of that it is somewhat catchy, and,
we'll get into it, because...
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason I also like to say this is the movie that is successful because of one goddamn song.
Well, there's...
That was sung really, really, really well.
There was two. I think there were two songs out of the whole thing, but, yeah.
But we'll get it. It's just... It's all up to you now. Fuck you. Okay. I mean, I guess that brings up a good question. Is there a series or a animated movie that you like... that or don't like that, you know, there's a lot of politics around it that people like it or not?
Of course. I mean, Love Hina, for one. I absolutely hate that anime with a passion. And
it's the reason why you've never read the manga, unfortunately, which I feel bad
I've
for.
I've tried reading the manga, but like I said in... God, I can't remember which AB episode that was that we did, but I want to say it was the, it was either the 2008 or 2009 episode that we did, but I tried reading the manga, and it was just, like, almost frame for frame of the anime at the beginning, and I just started having, like, nom flashbacks, and I just couldn't handle it.
It gets different. I mean... It is somewhat frame to frame. It's just, it's different because it doesn't have the whole wacky Looney Tunes type vibe to it that the animation has. But, you know, I do understand that. That's a series that's not for everyone. You know?
I still love, though, at the time that I was watching it, I was working as a traveling coffee repair technician. And I had gotten a portable DVD player to play movies while I'm sitting in the car waiting for stuff to do. Meanwhile, you know, I'm getting the disc through Netflix and didn't really know much about this series. So I'm sitting in the car watching it and, oh, look, there's a hot spring scene and they're all topless. And I'm sitting in a parking lot with people walking by and everything.
Well, technically they're not completely topless. There's no nudity shown in that scene.
No, there were full frontal boobs there.
I really don't... I don't remember nudity in Lovina.
The only reason why I remember it is because I was in a parking lot in a public location for everyone to see while I was watching it.
I guess I didn't get that version of Lovina.
Yeah, I had to turn it off and put it away and then just sit there in silence.
But, you know, I think that's why we're talking, you know, I brought up, you know, I reviewed and Move On last week, and a lot of the people that I feel like that are on my side about Frozen, it is that, and I love that meme. There was a meme that came out, I think in January, where everybody was like going off like, oh, how great Frozen is, and they're like, well, Frozen's great for this, and it's like a picture of like first done in this Disney movie and done in this Disney movie. It's like, I guess my issue is that people act like a lot of the stuff done in Frozen has never been done before.
Yeah.
And it has. It's been done in Mulan. It's been done in Pocahontas, in Beauty and the Beast, and in Little Mermaid. It's just... it irritates me. The politics is really what me have hurt the viewing of this movie for me. I mean, and there is stuff I actually do like. I have said since November, you know what? I think this is a good movie. I do enjoy it. I just don't think it's the, oh my god, a gift from Jesus Christ himself. You know, it's going to save the female race that people seem to go on and on and on about.
Well, I mean, that's the problem, especially with, you know, I mean, you see this in anime, with the anime community here, where if you do not have the same hive mind mentality about X series, and you say one bad thing about it, then, you know, God help you for speaking your mind about not having the same views that everyone else does.
And look, and I understand. I'll admit I have that to an extent. You know, oxytocin.
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, I at least like to think that when I have an issue with people not liking it, it's because they're... reason for not liking it doesn't make sense. You know, like certain reviewers who reviewed it on a toilet, who didn't pay any attention to the story and seemed to only watch it to count how many times boobs popped up on the screen.
Yep.
And we know who we're talking about, but we don't put anybody blessed on the show. but yeah, and maybe we should get into it proper, because a lot of this, and that's another reason I wanted to, because I did want to talk in more in depth about the stuff I did like. And, you know, hopefully by the end of this, I think people will have is your power morpher going off?
Yeah. I get a ghost.
Calm down. Don't be a thing.
Alright, so we're going to get into it. So let's go over our synopsis. Our story takes place in the kingdom of Arendelle, where the princesses Elsa and Anna live. Elsa has the magical ability to create ice and snow, but one day, she accidentally injures her younger sister, Anna, and the king and queen seek help from the king of trolls and his minions to heal Anna, which he does by taking away her memory. They then decide to, you know, lock up the castle gates, reduce the staff, and hide Elsa from everybody in an effort to try to help her control her abilities. Because that's always worked before.
Yeah, just throw someone in a hole and hope it goes away.
Yep. And this, of course, all leads to their teenage years when, you know, the king and queen, you know, have to leave for a royal trip. And, of course, as all good Disney movie does, they get right to the murder and the king and queen die.
He died? And this is supposed to be a kid's movie.
Well, this wasn't really necessarily a murder. It was an unfortunate accident.
It was a murder by Disney.
But then people are saying that that's the ship Ariel was swimming in The Little Mermaid.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how they're backtracking that, but that's not the point of this.
I know.
I wish I would have sent you beforehand the little clip I just played from Muppet's Treasure Island. But anyway, so of course that means Elsa is now Flan. This leads all the way up to they get adulthood and her creation, where in the process of opening the gates, younger Anna, who is just giddy with joy at the gates being opened, runs into the wonderful, amazing, incredible, oh my god, I'm in absolute love with this guy from straight out of the Twilight movies, Prince Hans of the South Isles. And they immediately want to be married, to which, of course, Elsa says no, because she has an actual brain in her body, and, you know, you can't actually marry somebody you just met.
Yeah.
Which leads to a fight, which leads to Elsa's magic of being able to create ice and snow being revealed, to where she is declared a monster, and she must run away, and in the process leaves the kingdom in a forever snow land.
You forgot one thing, though. This Prince Hans is the youngest of 12 brothers, so, you know, that's not foreshadowing at all.
No, none whatsoever! I mean, Disney wouldn't do a thing like that, would they? Anyways, it's up to Anna to bring her sister back, and along with the help of, you know, Kristoff, his reindeer Seven, and a snowman who so desperately wants to be Philip Seymour Hoffman, and God, I hope he ends up like him, they go to find Elsa. Of course, Elsa will not have none of it, and ends up hitting Anna in the heart with her ability. Kristoff takes Anna to the troll to try to heal her, but it is revealed that the healing the heart is not so simple. One must find the true love. Blah, 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 blah. So Kristoff ends up bringing Anna back to the, you know, kingdom to find Hans, so Hans can give her true love's kiss. And of course he leaves her with him, because that's what you do. And of course it's then revealed that Hans doesn't really love her.
Gasp.
No. No, really. There was literally a gasp in my movie.
Really?
With that. I swear to all the mothers, like, oh my god.
Oh, it's great that it was from the adults and not the children.
And the children, I think, were bored. Because it was the boring part of the movie. There were no songs. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But, of course, through this, Anna figures out that, you know, she must find Kristoff. So she goes on the hunt for Kristoff. Hans is hunting Elsa, who is ran away after being captured by Hans and the others. And just as Anna is able to get to Kristoff and hoping for that true love's kiss, she sees Elsa about to be struck down, to which she leaps in front, which causes her to completely freeze. Which saves Elsa, and Elsa is sorry and, you know, is heartbroken, which leads to a true love moment, which saves Anna, and all is well. Hans is captured and sent back to the South Isles, and Anna hooks up with Kristoff after getting him a new sled, and Elsa revels in her abilities of being the Ice Queen of Arendelle. This is Frozen.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight, not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation, and it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Don't let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they. Storm rage on. It's funny how some distance makes everything seem small.
So let's get right into it, as we always do, with music. And I guess let's start off by talking about the big thing, the songs. Were you like me in feeling that there really was only three good songs in this movie?
What was the third one?
Well, what were you said there were two. So what were your
basically
two?
The only two that really stuck out to me was "Do You Want to Build a Snowman and Let It Go?"
Okay, I don't feel it. "Do You Want to Build a Snowman?" And there's a reason for that, because it was good till they ruined it with the next two songs, which I'll get to in a second. For me, the three best songs in the movie were "Let It Go," "Fixer Upper," and the very first song you hear, which I don't know if that's technically the score or it counts as a song, because I think it counts as both, because you hear that chanting during the title screen, and then you see the Iceman, and it's that song that they're singing. And that was, I thought, a great song, because it set the atmosphere, it told a wonderful story, and it really got you into the vibe for the movie. And everybody forgets about that song.
Well, yeah, because it's, you know, unfortunately, I don't really think it's that memorable, and because it's at the beginning that people just tend to not remember.
Well, it's also because it's a song that's about, you know, the atmosphere and the mood.
Yeah.
And it's important. A lot of people, unless there's like these big lyrics like "Let It Go" is, and we'll get to "Let It Go" in a second, or in a couple minutes, you know, people tend to forget about it. "Do You Want to Build a Snowman" was fun, and it had one moment into it that I didn't think at first was going to be bad, but when they started doing it in subsequent songs, I was like, oh my god, it's going to be that type of musical. And it's the part where they seemingly pause the song to talk sing.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that drove me nuts in this movie, because it took all the drama of the song away, it took all the tension, all the storytelling it was, just to be cute. And I mean, I could point to so many other Disney movies where it doesn't, you know, Belle, yes, there's a scene where they seemingly stop and pause the song to have this little scene, but it all fits together, and it's this build up to the next part of the song, which is even bigger, you know.
Yep.
It's just, here it took all of the tension and everything away out of that. And then you get to "Open Up the Windows," which, if you really look at the song, outside of the lyrics, it basically fills the same need, or same thing, that "Do You Want to Build a Snowman" does.
Yep.
It's basically the same song with a slightly different melody and different lyrics. And it's not like, you know, again, I'll go back to my last review of Mulan. In Mulan, you had, let me try to remember the name of the song. It was the very first song, Please Bring Honor to Us, where they're dressing up to go meet the matchmaker. And then you have Reflection. They're two different songs, and they fulfill two different needs to tell one part of the story. Here, you have these two songs, "Do You Want to Build a Snowman?" and "Open Up the Windows," that are basically the same song and telling the very same story element again.
Yeah.
And it's redundant. And then hopefully you'll agree with me on this one. And then you have that little love song between Anna and Han.
Yeah.
Did that one drive you as crazy as it did me?
Yeah, because it was, you know, it was ham-fisted and, you know, classic Disney fluff type of stuff, but to an overused degree, I think.
But I wouldn't even say it's Disney fluff, because, you know, when you look at the great love songs, you know, there's drama and tension and storytelling. There's no storytelling, no tension, nothing of like that in there. It's like, oh, we're going to have this fun, poppy little love song in there.
Yeah.
And it just, oh my god, it drove me insane. Which I guess that brings us to Let It Go. Now, this song was amazing.
Yeah.
I think everybody, like, was, like, amazed by how great this song was. It's just, I think, too bad they screwed up the animation for it. And I say that because if you really watch that scene, the way they open that scene and close that scene, doesn't it seem like a music video to you?
Yeah, I mean, it really did feel like it was just made, like the animation was just made for that song.
Yeah. It's just, that song, granted, it's great animation, it's beautiful animation, as we'll get to later, but it's just, the way they bookended that song ruined the tension in the storytelling, because it's like, oh, it's like a Madonna music video, or Lady Gaga music video, to an extent. I mean, you could literally see the words, "Let It Go," Elsa Mendez, Walt Disney soundtrack.
Yeah.
Frozen on the scene. It's like, it took away a little.
Yeah.
But it still is an amazing song. The story it told and the way it fit with the overall theme, which I don't know if you felt the same theme as I did, which was it was all about not being afraid of who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it fit the theme. It was wonderful. Anything else about the song you felt? Because I don't want to, like, completely take this over.
About Let It Go?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, it's like, I like it, and then I also hate it for what it's become. You know?
I think that's because everybody's view now is that everybody loved it, but now it's become this thing on the internet and everywhere, and now everybody hates it.
Yeah.
Which I think is sad.
It's like, they just, like, everyone just killed that thing, that song.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there were people talking like, oh, it's the best song Disney's ever done.
And you killed it.
Yes. For one, besides the fact that, no. Like, this is why I say, like, it's the song that made this movie. Because they hear this song, and everybody thought of old Disney and Howard Ashman, and this is where I think the whole praise for it's like, oh, it's the best thing since Howard Ashman.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's a great song, and yes, it's very reminiscent of how Disney used to do songs. But Howard Ashman was about a complete soundtrack. How many people can sing every song that's in The Little Mermaid? How many people know every song that's in Beauty and the Beast? How many people know every song that's in Aladdin? A lot of people, because every song was made memorable.
Yeah, that is true. Because, I mean, they're obviously Disney classics. Where
yes.
If you, well, you know, you're a kid in the 80s and 90s, you obviously know all of these songs.
Yeah. But I'll bring up things like, you know, Hunchback of Notre Dame. How many people can still remember Hellfire and the Bells of Notre Dame? How many people can still remember all the songs to The Lion King?
I think The Lion King is... I don't think The Lion King is in the same category as Hunchback. But I also think that Lion King was probably somewhere in the thing of, you know, Disney kind of... their decline from hand-drawn and that type of... yeah. You know, movie telling.
Well, Hunchback was after Lion King.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, it's a great song. Well, yeah, actually, and then there's a song right after it. I can't even remember. I gotta go find what the name of the song is. It's a Snowman song, sung by Jeff Olof, or Josh Glad, or as I like to call him, the man who really wants to be Philip Seymour Hoffman, and God, I hope he ends up like him. That doesn't tell you if I liked him or not, does it?
No.
let me find the song. God damn it. Damn it, damn it, damn it, damn it. Because you think I'd be prepared for this.
Oh, I know.
God damn it, why don't they have the saws? They have... I'm at the original motion picture In Summer. That's the name of the goddamn song.
Okay.
I hate the song. Do you even remember the song?
No, I don't.
It's the one where they meet Olaf, the snowman, and he starts singing about snowmen in summer.
Yeah, that one. Okay.
Obviously, you didn't remember it much either.
Yeah.
It tells you everything you need to know about the goddamn song.
Well, it also goes to kind of tell you the type of character Olaf is, too.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that's what it was. And Olaf had some moments
to
come.
Yeah, he did.
He was funny, but he was also just as much not funny throughout the... And we'll get to Josh Glad's, portrayal and voice acting in this movie in a little bit. I want to bring this up before I get to the final song, is that at this point, you were about, what, 20 minutes, a half hour into the movie? And pretty much you've had every damn near song in the movie.
Yep.
That's another issue I have with these songs, is that they all, pretty much cornered them into, the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then there's this whole hour with nothing in it. No songs to tell story or anything. I thought this was an awful choice to do. Because it just left all this dead air. And it really showed when they used the reprisal during the scene where Anna and Elsa meet.
Yeah.
And she's singing, "Do You Want to Build a Snowman?" And Elsa singing a reprieve of "Let It Go." And to me, did that scene kill the story for you like it did me?
Which scene was that again?
It's the scene where Anna finally gets up the mountain and she's in Elsa's ice castle.
Oh, yeah. So at this point in the movie, I was kind of... It was weird watching it because it was... I don't know. I really wasn't expecting what actually ended up happening. You know? Because I don't, it's hard to explain because it didn't really feel like, I don't know. I felt like Elsa was going to be a lot more evil than what she turned out to be. You know? Because that's what I felt they were going for while watching the movie. But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I think a lot of that goes with story and the time frame that this, or timeline that this movie technically happens in.
Yeah.
But that scene, they start singing, and it's taking all of the tension and all of the, again, I talk about this, this is something the movie constantly does, is that they build some tension and drama and then take it away.
Yeah.
And here they just completely took all the tension, all the drama that's been building up for the past 20 minutes, and they throw it out the window with this very cheesy, corny musical scene. And this is why I say that the last, half of the film feels completely rushed.
Yeah.
Yes, they had this very interesting ending, but it's just everything felt rushed because everything from then on that happens in the story, and we'll get to that in a little bit, just, like I said, feels rushed. And it all comes from the fact that they took all the drama, all the tension, all the emotion that was in the film out because they had to be cheesy and corny in that scene with those reprieves.
And the weird thing, too, is this movie was almost 2 hours long, right?
I could look real quick for you. It is 102 minutes. So... a little over an hour and a half.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised because usually these movies are, they're 90 or so minutes long. And usually not this long for a child's movie.
Yeah, and because Disney and Warner Brothers have the thing to where they've done the math and you can only do a child's film for 90 minutes before they lose interest.
And I mean, it was kind of weird for a nearly 2-hour movie to feel so rushed in the end.
Yeah, it really does.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
But it's just one of those things to where that whole, all that drama that's been building up takes it out, and then there's no more drama, there's no emotion anymore in the film in that scene. This is not a thing of just not liking the style that it's done. This is a fundamental way you do films. And this is what I think people don't understand when I criticize this film. I'm criticizing the execution of the film.
Yep.
It's not a not liking what they did, it's a how they executed it. That's what separates good films from great films. You know, I mean, let's get to the last song, which is Fixer Upper, which I actually enjoyed. It was a very fun song. I enjoyed it. I mean, considering that that they brought from the 80s the Jewel Trolls back.
Yep.
Did you have the same thought when you saw the trolls that, oh my god, those troll toys from the 80s have come back?
Well, it wasn't that. It was making me think of something else, and I can't really quite put my finger on what it was. I think it was more for the Neverending Story, the rock people, in a way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they definitely did have another feel to them that I can't quite put my finger on. But it wasn't quite the whole, like, troll little dolls with the crazy hair thing. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, look for... Because they were big in the 80s. They treasure trolls, what were they called?
I think they were just trolls.
I remember there's the only thing I can remember of it was there was like this music video they did once of "There She Goes," just a walking down the street singing "Do a dee 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 do dee do." That's the only thing I can remember of it. I think it was Treasure Trolls.
Treasure Trolls, okay.
Treasure Trolls. Live podcasting is awesome, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was Treasure Trolls.
Okay, the Treasure Trolls were the ones that had the jewels in their belly buttons.
Yes, and they were huge in the 80s.
Yeah, there are just like the regular trolls that didn't have the jewels but still had the crazy hair and no clothes.
Yeah, and that's what the trolls reminded me of in this movie. Like, oh my god, they brought the Treasure Trolls back. But they had a very fun song. I mean, Fixer Upper, like I said, was just a very fun, classic Disney song.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unfortunately, that was the only song in the last hour of the movie. I think they really could have... I think that's something that hurts the movie, is that they really pushed, like, all of their songs at the beginning of the movie. Now, the score, on the other hand, I absolutely love.
Yeah.
I don't think they did anything wrong with the score. The score was wonderful. I love the Nordic tones in it. Again, I couldn't tell you what the instrument is called, but I know, again, it's these wood instruments that they use. It's a wind instrument, and it was very heavily... part of the soundtrack to really give it that Nordic and Swedish and sort of Icelandic feel.
Wow, why can't I not remember that?
I don't think we can remember a lot of stuff.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was almost like the, like a horn or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's like a horn. I mean, obviously, they also used a lot of other wood and wind instruments as well.
Yeah.
And by the way, the composer was Christopher Beck, who had worked on Paperman, which was the short.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, all right.
And by God, that the score for that little gem is wonderful as well. So this is a great composer. I love his stuff. I gotta find more of his stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, it starts off with the movie where you have that sort of Icelandic Nordic chant, as I was talking about before. Which, again, it has this very sort of, I'm trying to think of the word, sort of primitive feel to it. I think hits you deep. That, again, just really sets you up.
Yeah, very tribal.
Yeah, very tribal. I mean, anything else you thought about the score?
The thing that so the way I look at scores is, if you don't really remember it too much, then I think it's done a good job, because mm-hmm. it just ties in with the movie well enough. I think if I remember a score, it's either because it's absolutely brilliant or just did not feel out of place. One example is where a score made the movie is Tron Legacy, where Disney got
Daft Punk.
Yeah, they got Daft Punk and Hans Zimmer to write the score for the entire movie, and they just knocked it out of the park with that. And, you know, that's how you do a score for a movie. But for this one, I think because it didn't bother me that much, and because of that, it's I don't really remember too much of it. I think it did a pretty good job.
Oh, I'm sure to say, I mean, for me, you want to know it's there, but you want to enhance the scenes that are going on screen.
Yeah.
And that's what this score did. It enhanced. It was a verb to the story's noun, to put it in a way.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it was. And that's why it was better than the songs. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the songs overshadowed the score, which, yes, can tend to happen in musicals, and tends to happen all the time, but at the same point in time, like, you look at Beauty and the Beast's score, though a lot of people don't remember it, it's brilliant if you actually listen to it.
Yeah.
It is just perfectly brilliant. And here, this is was a wonderful score that is unfortunately very much overshadowed by the songs, but in actuality, the score was better than the songs in actually telling the story that was going on screen and enhancing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say this. I would get the soundtrack just for the score. Which should tell you something about the songs
again.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're getting the soundtrack, not for the songs, but for the score. With that, let's move on to animation. And let's go, I guess, the CG animated style of Frozen.
Go ahead. I enjoyed it. I mean, they did a pretty good job with everything. I mean, I don't really think that there was anything out of place or anything that was taking me out of the movie, you know, considering it is a movie for children and animated, you know.
I guess this is an issue where, you know, I have higher standards because, again, it's also Disney. So, like, I hold Disney to a higher standard, so you can tell me that I'm just bullshitting here. I mean, a lot of the CG was wonderful and brilliant and gorgeous and beautiful. I guess, and this will kind of flow into character designs as well. My issue was, again, whenever it seemed like they were trying to use the CG to be an imitation of hand-drawn. And my issue here, and I told somebody, you know, hand-drawn animation is like an illusion that, you know, makes people pretend something is there. It's an illusion of something in the space. It's magic.
Yeah.
But when you put an extra trick to try to fool people that there's an illusion there, you know, it's putting too much into it and the magic isn't there. The illusion doesn't work. You can't put a trick on top of an illusion. It doesn't work. And especially with the character designs, I think that this is what the case is here. Because there were some scenes where the eyes didn't look well, and they looked like dolls, like Barbie dolls.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see where you're going there.
Go ahead.
You know, yeah, there were some character designs that seemed too cookie-cutter and just really overly generic, and then some that were just overly caricature-ish.
Yeah. I mean, but the other thing also, like I said, the eyes. There were scenes where it seemed like the eyes were like literally like it was a Barbie doll. And it's this instance of you're trying to trick people that it's hand-drawn animation by using CG to imitate hand-drawn animation. But that is a trick on top of an illusion, because CG is meant to imitate realism and reality, whereas hand-drawn animation is an illusion of a reality.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't work. Am I making any sense to you? Because I've told this to some other people, and they don't understand what I'm saying.
I almost get what you're saying. I think you're just overly complicating the explanation.
Yeah, I probably am. It's just...
But yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from, where it's basically they're not really using the CG to the full effect, and yes, there were some aspects where it was just, you know, why not just do hand-drawn for this, because, you know, you could get the same character design by hand-drawing it than doing CG.
Yeah, I mean, I just want CG to be CG. CG cannot take the place of hand-drawn animation. It can't. It just can't. They're two different styles.
Yeah.
And I really hate the way, and again, we'll get into this later when we talk about sort of the politics of this movie again, from the Walt Disney standpoint of them, what they're doing with animation. But it's just a matter of, you know, let CG be CG. You know, let Shrek be Shrek. Shrek is successful because the CG was CG. You know.
Well, that and they wanted to piss Disney off.
that too. But, you know, hand-drawn animation, you know, CG is pop and rock, whereas hand-drawn animation is blues and R&B and soul. They're two completely different styles of doing animation. One is not better than the other. And I think I lost Chris there completely. You didn't say that I'm wrong, please. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong.
I think, you know, it comes down to, you know, unfortunately, how the director decides to go about doing it. And, yeah, you can be kind of lazy in the fact of, you know, using more of a hand-drawn styled character than actually going all out and creating something more, I guess, textured and more detailed than what we got with Frozen. But, I mean, on the other hand, too, this is where the industry has decided to go in, and I don't know how well the Princess and the Frog did, but I'm assuming it didn't do that great to warrant another hand-drawn movie.
Well, we'll talk about how Disney screwed the pooch on that one a little bit later.
Okay.
because,
but yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that Disney has really kind of gotten rid of the hand-drawn aspect of doing a movie and leaving the CG to Pixar.
Well, you know, the thing is that they're talking about that they have this computer program to where they can actually do hand-drawn on computer. It's what they use for Paper Man, but it's supposedly not ready yet.
Well, I mean, that's what a few of the Japanese studios are doing now.
Yeah, to my issue with that is, well, if it's not ready, then you should still be doing hand-drawn the old way.
Yeah, I mean, have the money for it.
I mean, if you can spend $400-500 million to do John Carter of goddamn fucking Mars, you can certainly spend what, $60 million for a hand-drawn animated feature?
Yeah.
It's... Now, I do love some stuff of the animation. I love the action animation. The action animation was wonderful. from the avalanches, you know, the chase scene with the wolves was fun. The fight with the snowman. The final scene where they're running across the ice and the ships are like being almost like thrown at Kristoff. My God, that was a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
I mean, any other action scenes that caught your mind?
The only other really one I can that comes to mind is them running from the snow monster there.
Yeah.
But that.
But it had, yeah.
Yeah. So.
It had its moment, but yeah. But the action we had mentioned great, and then the backgrounds and the special effects. These were the stars of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the snow special effects, the shadows, the. And the beautiful, gorgeous backgrounds that almost seemed painted.
Yeah.
It's just, oh my God, it was gorgeous. And I've said everything Chris wants to say.
Basically.
Yeah. So, with that, we're going to take a quick break, play some promos. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from a Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromalongbox.com, and from there you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life. At www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The next dimension. A Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The Schuster Herald Podcast,
It's Superman,
The Carazerald Podcast,
The Armored Hero Steel, a John Henry Allen podcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio Kale from supermanhomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Sapp,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Intentional freak!
Two!
On the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True! I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh,
shit.
It's
a super prize package worth $9,388.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Peyton!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Thank God damn lucky he didn't kill her.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on, let's go.
God, she likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I say shut up! It's a manhunt! A manhunt!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it as we always do with acting. And of course that means going over our cast list. So first we have Kristen Bell as Anna, Idina Menzel as Elsa, the Snow Queen, Jonathan Groff as Kristoff, Josh Glad as Olaf, Santino Fontana as Hans, Alan Sudeik as the Duke of Wesselton, Serene Hind as Grand Pabby of the Troll King, Maya Wilson as Gouda the Troll, Maurice LaMouche, you know, Brain from Peaky and the Brain, as the King of Arendelle, and the director of the movie, Jennifer Lee, is the Queen of Arendelle. Because that's not egotistical at all.
No.
So let's go with protagonists. What did you think of our protagonists?
You know, I thought it was, you know, the acting really wasn't all that bad. I mean, there's really not too much that I really have to say about it. I mean, the one thing, you know, and I always kind of feel this with Disney movies, especially when they go and do Ghibli stuff, where Disney feels like they need to get well-known actors to do these roles in order for people to actually
go see the movie,
whereas you have a fairly large talent pool of voice actors that do nothing but voice acting. Which, you know, I would love to see a big name studio do an animated movie with nothing but just voice actors.
Yes. I think we would all like to see that.
But yeah, I mean, there was really no one that stood out as really bad. And no one was, I don't know.
I think I can go through it quick. I mean, Christian Bale did an okay job. The problem with her character was in the writing of the character and the way they treated the character. You know, she just acted what they writed, so that's not really her fault. She did an okay job. And there were some moments where I liked her. There was a lot of moments where I hated her. But again, that was the writing. I love Jonathan Groth as Kristoff. I loved Kristoff's character. He made me laugh a lot. So I enjoyed his portrayal of it. I can't stand Josh Gad. Please. Oh my God, never put him in a Disney movie again. I mean, there were scenes where Olaf was funny. I will admit that. But there was a lot where he wasn't. And he just killed the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, there's... What was the scene? There was the scene where... I'm thinking about Fixer Upper, but that actually has to deal with story, which we'll get to. And then the people who played the trolls were good. I guess that brings us to our antagonist, which means Elsa, Hans, and the Duke of Wesselton. So what did you think of her antagonist?
So, now, my biggest issue with the antagonist, I think Hans was a good fit for it. And, you know, the acting really wasn't too bad. To call Elsa an antagonist...
She's in the middle, really.
Yeah, it's just really in the middle because I was expecting her to go full evil and not just be having a phase or being in a mood because people don't understand her. And that's the thing where it kind of got... I don't want to say frustrating, but just kind of like, it kind of made me just go give up, you know, caring, because it was just, I was expecting, you know, the classic Disney villain.
And you didn't get it.
And what we ended up getting was a woe is me, I am sad, people don't understand me, so let me run into the mountains and brood for all of eternity. Rather than people are about to kill me, I'm going to give it back to them much, much worse and make their lives a living hell.
And I think a lot of that goes to the pace and sort of the way the fact that this movie totally takes place, in 2-3 days?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is...
And there was an earlier draft of this movie where it takes over the place of a year. That would have been much better.
It really would have, because it would have fleshed out the story as well as character development.
Yeah,
because what this ended up being was just a big, huge misunderstanding.
Yes, it did. One of the problems with the story.
Yeah.
She did great at the beginning. The scene to where she, like, tells her sister, like, you can't marry somebody you just met.
Yeah.
Was brilliant. That's actually why I thought, like, throughout the movie, like, oh, they're going to hook Elsa and Kristoff up together by the end of the movie. Because they were the only ones with a sane mind in the movie. I agree with, I thought Santino Fontana did a great job as Hans. I did enjoy Menzel's portrayal of Elsa. Again, that's another instance of how they righted the character. But then you have Alan Tudyk. Now, have you seen Wreck-It Ralph?
Yes.
Remember King Candy?
Yes.
He voiced King Candy. This is the second goddamn movie he's stolen.
Nice.
I loved his character in this movie. He made me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
I loved his King Candy, and he was great here as the Duke of Wesselton. And he's a voice actor, I think. He is a predominant voice actor. Or at least he that's what he's working a lot on now.
Yeah.
Mind you, when I saw, like, additional voices, I saw some other, like, L.A. voice actors, you know, like Fred Tedisco, and the other likes. So with that, let's move on to story.
Okay.
The big hoo-ha. I guess the first point is let's talk about the overall plot of Frozen and this so-called journey that Anna and Kristoff goes on. Did you feel it worked or didn't? Because I guess that's the whole plot, was Anna and Kristoff trying to bring Elsa back from the mountain and to get her to stop freezing the kingdom. And I think we kind of said it earlier, is that why it doesn't work is because it was over 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. So it was, I don't know. It was okay.
I mean, it was, and they had some good scenes in it too.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, a lot of it dealing with art and anything, but the wolf chasing, their whole first meeting where they're at the, Outfitter and sauna.
Yeah, oh, I know.
I love that scene.
I do have to say one thing, though. Alan Tudyk,
yeah,
he was Steve the Pirate in Dodgeball, as well as in Firefly, he was Walsh. So
of course he's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Anybody that comes from Firefly is just immediately awesome.
Yep. But yeah, anyway, they're in the outpost, trading outpost and spa, and it was just, I don't know.
But, you know, it had some good things, again.
Oh, yeah, the other thing, too, it's like, she goes into the wilderness with a horse by herself, and ends up, like, falling into a river and, like, doesn't freeze to death.
It's Disney.
I know, but still. It's...
For all the talk about how different this movie is, they can't be too different.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I mean, I get Anna's character. It's just the way they made her begin to where she falls in love with this guy she just meets makes her look completely stupid. And by the way, that's one of my favorite scenes where they're in the sled and, you know, she's talking to Kristoff. She's like, oh, yeah, this guy, I'm going to marry who I just met. I'm like, wait.
Well,
like,
the thing is, in defense of that argument there, you do have to understand that she has been locked up in that castle for all this time. She's not that smart. You know?
Well, I think what we just proven is that Frozen is a perfect movie to present as a counter argument against homeschooling.
I don't think I'd go that far.
Sorry for all of those who have been homeschooled. But you know,
I know some fairly well-rounded people that have been homeschooled.
But, you know, And then there's the second, I mean, the journey to Elsa was fine. It was afterwards, to where it felt rushed.
Yeah.
I guess this goes to the point to where, I mean, let's get into the ending, is that, you know, they bring her back. It's almost like they rush back to the kingdom because she's been hit in the heart. And to get Hans, of course, Hans turns out to be the villain. And you have this big sort of action scene to where, you know, Kristoff is running across the ice, you know, with Seven, and Seven launches him off, and he runs on his own to get to Anna. And, of course, Anna ends up sacrificing herself, or attempting to save Elsa, which leads to, you know, the ending that everybody loves. I know you said you loved it.
Yeah, I mean, because it was something that Disney doesn't really do.
And I completely understand, and I do actually like it. My one little nitpick with the scene, and this is what gets me in trouble, and I don't understand why people don't get it, is that Kristoff disappears in the scene and does nothing. They have him do nothing. They don't even let him punch Hans in the face after everything's been well and they're on the boat and all the ice is gone. I'm like, let him do something in the end. He's had this big climactic run and then nothing.
Because his place is in the kitchen.
Yes. Oh, God, you're awful. No, his place is in the mountains making ice.
Yeah.
As the official Aridel ice maker. But no, I just want him to do something. I want him to hit something or do something other than just stand there like a rock. Am I horrible for asking that?
Apparently.
Yeah.
But, they had to leave something for the sequel, I guess. The direct-to-DVD sequel.
And is what I'm saying a fair criticism?
Yeah, I would probably say so. Yeah, I mean, Hans really didn't get his
come up.
Yeah, it's basically saying, oh, well, his 12 brothers will take care of him when he goes back home, type of thing.
Yeah, which is a cute little joke, but yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I enjoy, I guess, the little, you know, he gets a new sled and, you know, they're in love, but it just feels all anticlimactic.
Yeah.
And I think you could have done something with him against Hans and still had that ending to where the princess didn't need to be saved by him.
Yeah.
It's...
I mean, I almost feel like there's been scenes like that in other Disney movies.
Well, I mean, if you really want to be technical, I mean, let's look at Ariel. Ariel was helped Eric defeat Ursula.
Yep.
You know, if you really want to be technical about it, Belle saves the Beast. The Beast has been, you know, stabbed and he is dying from a kidney shot. And, you know, it's Belle who declares her love for him and basically saves his life. You know, Mulan, you know, basically shoves a rocket off Shang Yu's ass and defeats him all by herself.
Yeah.
The Alpha Mushu. Pocahontas stops a goddamn fucking war. The princess has saved the day in the goddamn fucking past. It's not something that's never happened. At the same point in time, this, I don't have a problem with the ending. It's a great ending. There's just a part of it that just feels anticlimactic.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's also one of the other weaknesses that, you know, they don't immediately fall in love and get married at the end, is it's just like, oh, we're kind of a family now, just the two girls and the guy, and the reindeer and the snowman, and,
yeah,
you know, they all lived happily ever after as a completely platonic family.
Yeah, I mean... It's that thing of, you know, well, I guess the hint was that they're now at Christoph and Anna are now boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah.
By, you know, kissing. Which, again, okay, so we're praising this movie because you didn't have the princess fall in love with the handsome prince that she just met, yet we had her fall in love with the guy she met 3 days ago.
Yeah.
All right, movie. I guess you see what you want to see. And yes, I get it, that it's about sisterly love, and that's great. But you can still have that and have the other stories fit. It, again, this is not a matter of the choice of what they did. It's a matter of the execution.
Yep.
And one thing I loved about this movie, though, was the overall theme. There was this theme in this movie about not being afraid of who you are. And that was the whole point of Elsa's powers, is that the reason she couldn't control them is because she was afraid of them. She was essentially afraid of who she was.
And she wasn't loved, apparently.
Apparently. But no, it is that thing to where I thought they did a great job with the overall theme of the movie. And again, how the story fit that theme and how the ending fit that theme and came to that conclusion. I thought it was wonderful. It's a great theme to talk about. And it does need to be talked about today. And again, honestly, I think that is another reason why people generally like this movie. That is fair.
Yeah.
Which is that, you know, again, you can translate this idea of not being afraid of who you are to people who feel that they are gay. Or, you know, gay or lesbian, or, you know, for being black or white. Or, you know, special. I think that Christoph is Disney's first special hero. I'm not kidding. Okay. And you know what? I am a special person. I can say that.
Yeah.
I am. I have a disability, folks. I've talked about it in the past. And really, when you look at him, I mean, he talks to reindeer and makes up conversation. If that is not somebody with autism, I don't know what is. I can speak from experience, unfortunately.
So apparently you speak to and for reindeers?
No, I speak in for and for action figures that I played with as kids.
I think all kids did that, though.
My mom patted me on the back for, like, admitting.
But see, I think they designed the character to be that way. To appeal to the younger kids because, you know, that's how they play.
I know, but it's like, they had an opportunity there to, you know, appeal to, like, do something actually different. Wow, we have a hero that has a disability.
Yeah.
But apparently that's too different for Disney to do. But I still kind of like to look at it, at, you know, Christoph as that example of somebody who knows who he is, and he is who he is.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the other side of it that Elsa eventually becomes. And so, again, this theme of not being afraid of who you are, I love that theme of the movie.
Yeah.
I guess another story point is, it seems like Anna overshadows Elsa in the story. And I think that kind of hurts it. Do you get that same sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is who is the main character here? Like, who is this story about? Is it about Elsa, or is it about Anna? You know, or... Yeah, I mean, it's like, who is the main...
Well, the main characters is supposed to be these sisters. But that, in fact, is where the problem lies. Because if it's about the sisters... You need to give them sort of equal time, and I don't felt like they gave them equal enough time.
No.
I felt like a lot of it was on Anna, and again, that hurt Elsa in the end.
Yeah.
I mean, when I say hurt Elsa, I mean, again, it's another point of execution. Yes, they got to the themes that they needed to get to tell all the story points, but they didn't do it as good as they could have done it. And that's, again, a matter of execution.
Yep.
I mean, say everything that you said, wanted to say?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's... Yeah, I mean, the movie was okay. It wasn't... I don't really understand where people are coming from, where they're going out of their mind saying that this is the best animated movie ever created in the face of the entire time and creation. You know, it's an okay movie. I don't see anything really completely mind-blowingly spectacular about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and then on the other hand, too, it's a Disney movie for kids, so...
Well, that's really the difference between this movie. This is a movie for kids, as opposed to those so-called early Disney animated films that were for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's really what it was. Those movies didn't feel dumbed down. There are places to where this movie feels dumbed down, and one of those places sometimes is the comedy. Now, I somewhat enjoyed the comedy in this movie. It was good in some places, but again, it's another instance to where, because it was bad in a lot of places, it didn't help enhance the movie and give it that sort of very family, that very warm-hearted feel that you want the comedy to do for movies like this.
Yeah.
And then there's the pace. I think we've talked about this enough, but I'll just jump on it again. The pace of the movie was awful. All the songs were in the beginning, and the fact that you have this story happen over 2 or 3 days hurts the movie. It should have been over a year. But we kind of touched on that already. I think we agreed.
Yeah.
It should have been a year for character development.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the biggest comparison that I can give this movie is... You had Frozen and the Lego Movie come out right around the same time. The thing with the Lego Movie is there was something for everyone there. No matter what age you were. It's just it worked for all age groups over there.
Will you hate me if I said I hadn't seen the Lego Movie?
No, that's fine. But
I just wouldn't go see it because, you know, McDonald's had the Lego cups and people went goddamn nuts for those cups. They're cups.
My nephew was so disappointed that he got a Happy Meal and the toy was a cup.
But they're holographic.
Yeah, he was just so, like, heartbroken. But,
That's a story for a different day.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Like, the songs and everything in the Lego Movie and just the overall story and everything that was going on, there was something for everyone in that movie. This one here, it was just marketed for kids, and I don't want to say it, but just the people that are just followers, really, you know?
Bandwagon jumpers.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, which I think that's a great point to bring us into our final point. And it seems like there's two politics that seem to surround this movie to praise its greatness. One is, I call it feminine, because it seems like, really, that's why so many people are so big on the ending. It's this feminist idea of a princess not needing a man to save her, and that really pisses me off, because it's not about needing a man to save her. You have two people who are in love. You have this male who is in love with a woman and wants to do something to protect her, but that apparently is a horrible, terrible thing for her to need somebody's help, because that's not love.
Yeah.
I guess I'm the only one in the world brave enough to go into that topic.
I'm not going to open that can of worms. So,
okay. I'll leave that on my own, then.
Okay.
I'll go on that journey. But you got where I'm coming from, though, right?
Yes. That's all I'll say.
Okay. But I guess the other one we can both talk about is the Disney animation front. And we kind of talked about it before, to where they're going to, going to CG and leaving hand-drawn behind. And you brought up Princess and the Frog, and, I mean, I can look it up right now, but it didn't do bad. It made a decent enough profit. What hurt the film was the way they promoted it. Because they promoted it as, you know, oh, we have a black princess. Come see it because we have a black princess. You know, it's a... And you know what? When it should have been like, hey, it's a return to hand-drawn animation. And we have this wonderful princess, and it's, like, themed with, you know, New Orleans and everything. And I have it right here. Well, those are the DVD sales. Box office was $267 million. That's not bad for a hand-drawn animated film.
No.
Especially when it has a budget of $105. So it made the double it needed, and then some. But I guess because it didn't make $300 million, because Lord knows we need our films to make $300 million now.
Oh,
because
that's the only way they're going to be profitable.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a. By the way, I loved at the time Disney said, "Well, it was a dud because it didn't do well with 8-year-old males." I swear to God, that's why they said it wasn't a good movie.
Wow.
again, all that came. There was, I think, a lot of people who didn't go see it because they thought it was a gimmick movie. That Disney was trying to jump on a gimmick because we had a black president and everything was about, you know. And I think they pushed it that way because they don't know how to promote movies anymore, or at least the CEOs don't.
Yeah.
But more importantly, because I think the CEOs want to move on to CG. Me and Gerard talked about this a couple weeks back when we did the Redux review of Sleeping Beauty, of that they think that CG is cheaper. It's not.
Well, I think they have the mentality of they can get it done faster than hand-drawn.
Well, that's really the only thing, is that CG is can be done a little bit faster. And that's really why it seems like it really costs less. But it doesn't. And the fact is, Beauty and the Beast proved this, by the way. You can do a hand-drawn animated film in the same time frame as CG.
Yeah.
It's just... It just pisses me off that Disney does this. And John Lasseter, you know, he is supposed to be protecting all of this. Instead, he seems to, like, throw the bones towards his Pixar studio, which I guess should be obvious, but with his love for Hayao Miyazaki, I thought he would have had more, you know, heart in trying to protect the hand-drawn animated style. I guess if they come out with the computer program that they say they're working on and it brings back hand-drawn animation and he's a big part of it, I guess he was, but at this point, we don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I never really felt Lasseter had his priorities or anything like that too much into really old technologies. I don't know. To me, it just feels like he's kind of a bandwagon jumper of the latest and greatest type of stuff and kissing Hayao Miyazaki's butt.
Miyazaki's ass. Yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, that's really, I think right now the only thing we can think of for is that he's been a key part of bringing all those movies over here.
And then, you know, who knows what happens now that Miyazaki has, who knows if it's finally retired, but, you know, retired now that we'll see if there's a bigger push for Disney to start doing hand-drawn again. Because the thing is, if Studio Ghibli can do hand-drawn animation with very little computers, why can't Disney?
That's the big question. Yep. And they don't have a good answer.
No, they don't.
They really don't. They don't. They just don't want to do it because they've determined that CG costs less for whatever reason. And this is the politics that are going on right now with animation. And look, I will be the first to admit, it is something to part of the reason why I do have an issue with CG, is that they're pushing CG in a way, and, you know, we saw it here with Frozen. How many different versions of the movie did they have? They had the sing-along, they had all these different versions of it, you know, and they basically have been having it play since it came out in November. And just this past week, they throw their arms up and cheer, like, it's past the 1 billion mark, and it's the most profitable animated movie of all time.
Yes. And it's like, the thing is, it's like, adjust the other movies for inflation, and if they had that many different showings.
And I guarantee you, all of them would beat Frozen hands down.
Yeah.
It wouldn't even be a contest.
I mean, it's like the same thing with the Dark Knight movies there, is that they released it, it made a ton of money, they re-released it to theaters before it hit DVD, so it bumped it up to the highest grossing film, or one of the highest grossing films there. So, you know, it's at, like, you cannot trust these highest grossing movie ever in all the land type of thing, because they never had this many gimmicks back in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah.
They're marketing these things ridiculously now. And that's why all the money's pulling in. And because you have these, like, rabid fans saying, oh my God, Frozen is the best thing ever made, and you need to go see it, people then go see it, and then they feel like they have to say
the same thing, because they don't want to be seen like that. They hate the difference of the movie. I mean, they don't want to be seen as, like, being sexist, because really that's sort of the can I wanted to open, is that there seemed to be this political idea that if you didn't like Frozen, you were sexist.
Yeah,
which pissed me off. But yeah, I think we went through it enough. Let's rate the movie.
Okay.
Because I think people want to rate. So on a scale of 1 to 5, what do you give this movie?
1 to 5, I would probably... I'd probably say a little over 3.5.
You know what? Actually, that's my rating too. 3.5. You know, it is a good, solid movie. I think we talked a lot. You know, there's a lot of things we like in this movie. And you know what? I do enjoy watching it. And I will watch it again. I mean, I have the Blu-ray, obviously. But I will be watching it again. But there are some... It's the execution. And I guess this is where I agree with the fact that... I agree with Frozen winning the Oscar for Best Animated Movie. Because... And I know you went and saw Wind Rises. The issue with Wind Rises was a huge mistake with the pace and the time jumping.
Oh, yeah. Wind Rises is not a... should not be a contender at all, because it's just... I mean, there was nothing new about that movie at all.
I mean, it got good at the end, but it was a biography.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the only one of those movies I hadn't seen yet was the French one, and I would really like to see it.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember, but yeah, that looks really good.
Yeah, I really want to see it. But yeah, I have to agree with Frozen, and you don't know how much it hurts me saying this, with Frozen winning the Best Animated Film, because of the films I saw, it was the best. Because it, even though it had some flaws to it... You know, they were minor, they were execution flaws. They were flaws in the form of, it's the difference between a great movie and a good movie. And Frozen is a good movie, but it is not a great movie. I don't think I'd put it in the top 15 Disney animated films of all time.
I will say, I found it funny when we went to Anime Boston. In our episode, we talked about one dealer in particular, DNL. Was it DNL or CNL? I think it was CNL. They were actually selling the Frozen Blu-ray there. It was funny to see it amongst all the other anime that they were selling.
Were people fanatically grabbing at it?
No. it was just sitting on the shelf. And the funny thing, too, is people would walk in and go, oh, hey, Frozen, like kind of point and laugh and then walk away.
Oh, I love you anime fans. You've done right.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of Frozen cosplay?
Yes, and it was predominantly like the 15 and 16 year olds.
So that's our rate. I mean, I don't want people to think I hate this movie because I do enjoy it. I just have issues with the with some of the execution. I think, you know, whenever I talk about it, people jump on me. Again, it's that politics that because I don't think it's the greatest thing ever, I'm automatically sexist and wrong. And it pisses me off. Yeah. And I think I have a right to be pissed off at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, we did the show Random Redbox Reviews, and there were quite a few movies where it was just... What was the director thinking with the execution here? I mean, Frozen isn't to that degree, but it's along the same lines of, you know, you could have done a little better with the execution.
Yeah. So that's our review. I hope you guys enjoyed. I hope I presented a fair criticism. I hope you see it for fair criticism. I hope I wasn't too bad. I really tried to keep from ranting and raving. I thought I did an okay job. Did you think I did an okay job?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. If you have... before I talk about how you can contact the show if you want to, Chris, want to promote Shaft Plus?
Yeah. So if anyone's listening and haven't heard of us before, you know, go to our site, shaftplus.com. We are on Stitcher. You can search for us from Entertainment and Animation. And we're also on Facebook.com/ShaftPlus, at ShaftPlus on Twitter. We're on Google+. You just gotta search for us there. Basically, anime, video games, movies, general geek culture type of discussions, and reviews, and... We're going to be doing a lot more stuff come May when everyone's schedules seem to start to clear up. So be on the lookout for that. And, yeah.
And, of course, Shaft Plus is part of the 132 Productions family. So, of course, if you have any comments for any, or at least for this show, there's several ways you can contact the show. You can contact us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can contact us on Facebook by going to www.facebook.com/absolutionnetwork. Like us and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, while you're there, check out all of the other 130 Productions content. Of course, Shaft Plus, my CMG reviews, and the Otaku Momentum, though I guess he's not doing the Otaku Momentum anymore. I just have past episodes.
Yeah, it's the otakuintuit.com now.
Yeah. I still have to talk to him. I haven't talked to him in a while. I think I'm going to, you know, call him up, see what he wants to do.
Yeah, I think he's going to be... him and Wasnada. We're going to try and get them on one of our shows soon.
Yeah.
So.
But his, you know, so the Otaku Momentum, maybe at some point in the future, his new show. But at this point, the Otaku Momentum, along with CMG's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. My Godzilla podcast, Tokyo SOS. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Look forward to the Godzilla 2014 content we are going to release. I am planning a lot of things with that, including a sort of midnight review, because I am going to the midnight release of that movie. Even if I have to walk home for 2 hours in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I gotta try and find someone that wants to go see that movie.
Yeah. And of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, now with the newly relaunched Comic Book Crazy at CMJews Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and of course, Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey's views in the long box, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Fleischer's Major Spoilers podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks podcasting network, along with many more. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, it's episode 92, and next week we do the final Disney movie. And it's a movie I've been wanting to talk for a long time. It's a movie that I feel is responsible for the downfall of hand-drawn animation that Disney is doing. It's a movie that is also one of my favorites of all time. I'm, of course, talking about The Hunchback of Notre Dame. So until next time, my Tsunami Generation. Stay eagle.
Deser. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.